couple of months ago, I saw a teaser trailer for this Minis Agnostic fantasy tabletop game, and it really kind of piqued my interest. Then I saw it was going to be put out by Blacklist Games, and it got my interest even more. And then I saw that it was going to be designed by one of my favorite game designers, Mark Latham, and I said, I need to know more about this project. So today, we're going to be talking with the VPs of product development for Blacklist Games about Lasting Tales. Stick around. Hey everyone, welcome to Victor Kinchin Gaming. My name is Doug. Today on the show, we're talking Lasting Tales. Before we begin, I'll remind folks that if you're interested in anything that we're talking about today, please check out the Kickstarter and the links below in the description. And if you're excited about Lasting Tales, please hit that like button. Let me know in the comments what you're excited about and if you're backing this project. And I'd love to hear more about what you think about Lasting Tales. So without further ado, let's bring on the dynamic duo of Adam and Brady from Blacklist Games. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today and giving part of your day for the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You guys are just rocking it there at Blacklist Games. I've been watching your studio just kind of take off these last few years, and it's really kind of an honor to have you on to chat for a little bit.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we've been trying to stay busy, keeping projects going as fast as we can. So
absolutely. You guys have been designing games for like 10 years plus at this point. You've worked on some of my favorite games of all time. You've worked on Descent. You've worked on X-Wing, you've worked on Mansions of Madness. These are games that I just loved. And then you've gone on and created your own studio there at Blacklist Games, and you're just crushing it.
Trying to.
Yeah, we both got our start over at Fantasy Flight Games. We both worked there for a few years. We worked on some really cool projects. I think Descent Second Edition was pretty much the one that kind of opened the door for me in the industry as far as game design goes. We pretty much from there did freelance, and now we got hired full time by Blacklist, and that's kind of what our big focus has been for the last, I don't know, 2 years now.
Yeah, it's been going on three, I think.
But we still do the occasional side project with other publishers as well. We have that freedom, which is nice. So
you had the massive success of AlterQuest, which is now, I think it's out and people are just raving about it. And then earlier last year, you did this fantasy Minis Series 1 that was a big success. So, and that's, you know, going out right now to backers. So you've been on my radar for a while, and I'm really, really excited to have you on. The one question that I have, though, before we begin and kind of talk more about Blacklist Games, and this is just kind of me personally kind of wondering how it all works between you two guys. You always hear that you're not supposed to work with family, that it never works. But you guys seem to be rocking it, and you guys have this great dynamic duo kind of aspect of your game design and what you guys do. From an outsider looking in, I think it's probably because like you have so much passion in game design and putting out and being a part of the putting out games and being a part of the industry. Is that how it is? You guys?
I think there's two big factors involved, because being twins, we've only known a handful of twins through our life, identical twins, and they kind of come in two forms. Like there's one type of twin can really be into the same things and not have that problem with like losing their identity, you know, if they like the same thing as their twin brother. There's other twins where they kind of compete more often, and they have to like make their identity by being different enough from their twins. So we were kind of more the first type, where every time we got into something creative, it was always sort of like a, you know, we were feeding off each other's energies. So we play like a lot of two player Nintendo games growing up, and everything was always kind of like, you know, buddy cop stuff. We loved those movies growing up.
So I think a lot of our interests growing up were things that were involved groups of people. Like we were into, you know, team sports like baseball. Sure. When we got into music, we played in a band together. So it's stuff, nice, you know, you need to collaborate on anyway. And if you already have somebody, or like, for example, back when we were kids, we both like baseball. We always had someone to play catch with. So we would play catch all the time. So a lot of our interests happen to be things you could involve each other in. So that kind of helped as well.
Yeah. All but that being said, though, it is still,
it's a big challenge. It's a very big challenge.
Cause you get into the dumbest arguments, because, you know, it's a sibling. Of course you're going to be bigger about the dumbest little things.
And it's never about work. It's always about something some personal, like, you know, he comes to my house to work and he like leaves trash on my counter. Pick up the trash. If you're going to eat a candy bar, go to the trash.
Everything gets blown out of proportion. So there is the challenges and the hangups, but you know, luckily I think we've always kind of tried to do things the hard way, and that kind of makes us more creative and more driven. So we just, I guess, like the extra challenge, I guess. I don't know.
Sure. I think we also complement each other's weaknesses, where I think Bray's more the creative type and I'm more of the project management type. So we both have those, you know, small elements of each other, but like, I think he focuses more on the creative stuff and I focus more on the, okay, let's put this on the paper, let's get it into Tabletop Simulator, let's play test it, things like that. So
okay, excellent. I have no idea what you're talking about when you say pointless disagreements with siblings. I never had that
before. Nobody has. No.
That was kind of my other question, is do you guys approach game design differently, or is it pretty similar? I think kind of answered that question, but
I think the main difference being is I think Adam's much more aware of not doing like wasted effort, like not going too far down rabbit holes for ideas, whereas I'm more like a creative fire hose where I just spray a bunch of stuff as much as possible and try to get all my ideas out. And I think I'm less prone to look at the big picture and see what to avoid and everything. I'd rather just try these things out and I kind of get motivation from that. So like, I don't mind being a workhorse in the way where I'll just try 7 or 8 different ideas as opposed to just, you know, thinking really hard about which one might be the best bet down the road. So I think that's the biggest difference is kind of the upfront aspect. Cause once we get down in the weeds and we're doing, you know, balancing and all the, you know, the fine tuning, we kind of work more similarly. I think it's more just from the onset, we have a much different approach.
Yeah. I think we can both sit down and design like decks of cards for a game. Sure. Pretty similarly, we have a similar mindset as far as design and development goes. But like Brady said, he kind of looks at things as, I don't know, you go outside and he sees like a huge landscape, like to view of his creative energy. And I'm kind of just, I look at I see a hallway. It's like, there's the product at the end of the hallway. Let's focus in on, let's make this game. This is the game we need to make. So I usually am chopping things up that Brady throws our way. It's like, let's focus on this one thing and leave the other stuff for another project. But yeah, those are very general approaches of how we approach game design, but I feel like they cross over a lot. You know, sometimes I might have a creative inspiration of a game, like Lasting Tales, for example. I'm kind of exploding with ideas for that one.
Sure.
We'll get into that more.
Yeah, another thing too is a lot of times I'll get in the trap of just wanting to like kind of make games that I kind of visualize, where Adam has a much more specific vision, like for Lasting Tales and the miniatures, the fantasy miniatures product line. That was pretty much all Adam, seeing how the tabletop skirmish world was, because he's very involved in that, and seeing, you know, where to fill a void. And that's something I wouldn't have saw. I would just be wanting to make a game because I thought of some cool idea and I want to run with that one thing. So I think I'm much more kind of shallow in that regard, where I just want to kind of play off creativity.
I mean, we've mentioned it. Let's talk a little bit about Lasting Tales, and this is a Kickstarter that's launching March the 30th, and it's
coming up soon.
Yeah, it's coming up very soon. So I'm going to tell folks that if you're watching this before the Kickstarter, check out the link in the description. Hit that notification button if you're watching it before. If you're watching it after, I'm sure you'll be able to support the line after the fact. Let's talk a little bit about this, because I thought it was really kind of neat how you put out this fantasy line series one, huge success. It was great value for folks that pledged the first series, and then now you're coming back with the series two. And also creating this book for the skirmish games that supports the minis, although you don't have to use the minis if folks really don't want to, but it definitely will give more use to the minis if you have them. I thought that was a really kind of a genius way to do it and approach it. I love the idea of this product just in general. I thought it was a really, really smart way to go about it.
Yeah, the Fantasy Series 1 was definitely kind of an experiment as a company. It's something that I had this idea for something that I wanted to do, because I play a lot of games like Frostgrave and, you know, Ranger of Shadowy, things like that, where there are these miniature agnostic games, and I kind of want all kinds of different miniatures to use for it. And I want them, I like assembling miniatures, but I you know, I don't like to do it all the time with every game that I play.
Sure.
Usually I just do that with really nice, like GW miniatures. I will take time and I'll model them and paint them nicely. But sometimes I just want a bunch of miniatures, easy access to a bunch of miniatures. And that's kind of where the idea from this came, because we also, you know, played D&D in the past, and we always wanted lots of different miniatures to use for encounters and different characters, you know, NPCs. So that kind of made me think, you know, it'd be really cool to just produce a line of fantasy miniatures that you can use for role-playing games or these tabletop skirmish games that kind of fit just very traditional fantasy archetypes, specifically like D&D. Like, that was the kind of the baseline I was going for. Was I like these archetypal classes and races and monsters and stuff like that you would see in games like D&D. We weren't really sure what the market was for that, because there are lots of companies that make miniatures,
right?
But we had a specific vision where we wanted to keep the style consistent among all the miniatures. They kind of look cohesive, and also you get them, you don't just buy like little blister packs of one or two miniatures and you end up spending like $100 on 20 miniatures or something.
Right.
You want to make it so you buy this big box of tons of miniatures for a great value. You might not want all of those miniatures for some specific reason right now, but sure, if you get that box, a big bulk box of miniatures, you're going to save a ton of money in the long run. And that's kind of what we want to go for. And the Kickstarter for Fantasy Series 1 definitely showed us that the market is there for lots of miniatures at a good value. So that kind of made us realize, okay, we should probably, you know, look harder at this product model and see how we can, you know, do it long term. Because this was, like I said, this was kind of an experiment. Let's just see, you know, it's a great value, but let's see if we can make it in this, you know, this price point and, you know, have some kind of profit to run the company on and all that stuff. So it told us a lot from that project, and we were using that for Fantasy Series 2, which is going to be available in Lasting Tales. And Lasting Tales was a game that we actually teased during the Fantasy Series 1 Kickstarter.
It's something
we always had planned. We it was our first tabletop skirmish game for this company. So we were kind of unsure about how to approach it and if our fans would be interested in that kind of thing.
Right.
But we also realized that with Fantasy Series 1, we brought in a lot of new fans, like role-playing gamers and skirmish gamers that might not have heard of our board games. You know, it's good because we're hitting multiple types of audiences with this new product. And it's got us really excited to kind of go further with it, with this game now to use those miniatures in.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that Kickstarter is really great for, is to kind of build your community and kind of, you know, figure out if there's a need for a product, and then, you know, keep building on that. And that's another reason why I'm really excited to see Series 2 come out, because it's just going to keep growing this line that you want to put out there. Lasting Tales, you said you teased it in Series 1 a little bit. How did this collaboration with Mark, I'm a big fan of what Mark designs. I love Walking Dead All Out War, the Elder Scrolls Call to Arms games. Both of those are really, really high in my book. How did this collaboration with Mark and you know, take place?
Well, we were when Adam mentioned, we teased the Lasting Tales concept, the vision. It was something we were tinkering around with for us to design, because like he mentioned, we play a lot of Frostgrave. Mm-hmm. We were reading up on Rangers of Shadowdeep because it's kind of cooperative.
And we actually picked up Elder Scrolls
Arms
as well at that time.
So nice. we were prepping to take that on. But then we had other projects. We were always looking at the schedule, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 years in advance. So we were looking at projects we were taking on, and we're like, well, maybe we should, you know, collaborate on this one, because this is going to be something we want to keep. We want to make a great foundation for this to make a lot of content going forward, kind of like a role-playing system, essentially, you know,
or right,
a D&D system you can just make modules for. So we were talking about who to collaborate with, and I kind of just jokingly mentioned Mark, because I love The Walking Dead, the All Out War. It's one of my favorite miniature games.
I love it. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a zombie nut. So I remember his name popped up a bit, because we also just picked up, like Adam said, the Elder Scrolls. We were tinkering with that as well. So we kind of just, you know, reached out randomly. But when Adam pitched the concept to Mark in the email, it was pretty much like exactly what Mark had always wanted to make. So the conversation spawned from there, and we just, you know.
Yeah, our first meeting with Mark was basically just like three high school kids at lunch talking about games they liked, stuff like that. Like, we're all just on the same page of what we wanted to make. So it was like, you know, this is a no-brainer. Of course, you're the perfect guy for this. And Brady and I still want to be involved in the development of the game and
right, you know,
designing scenarios, things like that. But we definitely wanted to have someone who was very experienced in the tabletop skirmish design world. Like I said, I've been playing those games since I was a teenager. Warhammer is what got me into tabletop gaming. And so skirmish gaming is kind of my favorite type of gaming. But I've never actually designed one aside from my work in like X-Wing. That was probably the closest I ever had experience designing tabletop wargaming. But like I said, I have plenty of ideas for it, but I wanted to make sure the product was in the hands of somebody who's done this before. He knows what the pitfalls to look out for and what things to focus on to make it really shine.
Yeah. Also just the experience of actually writing those books, because designing this big miniature system, but also just writing the book from front to back. And he's an author. He writes novels. He's written so many of the skirmish game books. So he was the experience we were looking for. And luckily, like Adam mentioned, we were all on the same page, same vision. And it just, things took off from there pretty quickly.
It kind of also spawned off from the fact of at Blacklist Games, we've started to work more with external designers. We have a fantasy football game coming up later this year called Myth and Goal, which we've teased, and that's being worked on with James Hewitt and Sophie Williams.
Oh yeah, from Needy Cat. They made the Hellboy board game. I'm a big fan of. Yes. Yeah.
So we're always looking out for designers we admire and want to work with. And so now that our roles are, we used to be senior game designers at Blacklist. Now we're VP of product development. So we're kind of involved in planning projects, and we don't always have the luxury of get a design every game we want. We kind of have to manage projects and find other designers to help us out to move all these projects along. And we definitely want to work with designers we admire, and Mark is definitely one of those designers.
So. How much of the book is pretty much done at this point? I know it's still kind of in playtesting, and in fact, I'll show folks that I've got a copy of the demo rules right here. As soon as you sent this over to me, and I'll tell you what, I think it took me 5 minutes to download it onto my zip drive and bring it to Staples to print this out. And I said, I need this immediately. Can you rush this through for me? And they did. They did a great job. And I'll tell you what, I've played the demo rules 3 times so far. Super impressed. Super impressed. All 3 times, I've played the same scenario, because there's only one scenario in there. The Village of the Damned, I think, is what the name of the scenario. All 3 times it plays out differently. Like, there's so much replayability in this rule set, and I'm telling you, folks, this is a really great game. I'm just kind of curious as to how much. This is just the teaser, and I'm pumped about this. I can just imagine once you get the whole book in my hands, how much more excited I'm going to be. How much of the book is kind of done at this point?
Mark's been pretty busy ever since we locked down those demo rules. We told him we want to make sure we're not going to give the rule book as a PDF on the Kickstarter, because that is the product. The product is the rule book. But we want to definitely give people an idea how the game plays, at least one scenario with some pre-made characters. And so that's kind of what the demo rules are. And those are going to be available to anybody on the Kickstarter page.
Nice.
You can check them out. But that is just a very small slice of the game. So the full game is going to have character creation rules. So you can make your character out of all the different races and classes. It's going to have the core rules, obviously. They're going to be expanded upon and somewhat changed from the demo rules, because as we've been playtesting, things have slowly been refined and improved and tweaked just a little bit. There's going to be campaign rules, which is the most exciting thing about the game, probably.
Right.
You can develop your character over the course of these several adventures. And what we're calling campaigns, tales.
There's two types, essentially. There's like campaign play. You can pretty much do a free form. You just kind of play linked adventures, and that makes your campaign. But we also are going to do tales, which are essentially kind of, if you think of like D&D terms, like Pathfinder terms, an adventure module is like a pre-published adventure. That's what tales are going to be. It's like, here's a story we're going to write. You can play through the story. It's all prepared for you. But that's kind of a framework so people can see how they can make their own campaigns and their own stories, essentially. So
the campaign rules are kind of like make your own tales.
Yeah.
You can just put a bunch of random adventures together, or you can kind of make your own story. So those adventures kind of, make narrative sense to your group.
Yeah. And we haven't nailed down the exact number of the adventures and scenarios or adventures. That's what we call scenarios in the game. So every adventure is just a game session, essentially. And those could be, mostly combat oriented, but there's also just like social encounters or mysteries or investigations, stuff like that. but there's probably, we're still working with Mark, because Mark's he keeps adding he keeps adding content.
He keeps making more work for himself. Yeah,
that's awesome.
He's excited about the game.
So great. Like, we're probably looking at over 20 adventures at least.
Wow.
Because the adventures, there needs to be enough in there for players to make their own, to use kind of more generic encounters, generic adventures, where they're not too narratively driven, because they're supposed to fit into any campaign you make. But then there's also going to be at least the 10 adventures for a for the tale that's in the game.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Village of the Damned in the demo rules is an example of a more narrative.
Yeah, yeah. So the Village of the Damned, if you stripped away some of that narrative, the narrative and special rules, that would be more of like a settlement encounter, because you have environments, you have settlements, right, wilderness, and
dungeons.
And most of the kind of generic adventures will fall into those categories of and then this, the Village of the Damned, would be kind of like a settlement adventure. But okay, you take that, you add more narrative, you add more special rules, more characters, and then it becomes a more fleshed out an adventure you might find in a tale. So you'll end up seeing something similar to Village of the Damned in the tale, but it's going to be even more narrative woven in to be part of the overall story.
The apprentice necromancer you come across will probably have a name and a character in the tale. So
nice. Okay, excellent. Yeah, the one thing that I love about Mark's designs is that they're simple, but yet they work really, really well with a lot of his game design mechanics. And there's some really, really great designs, really great mechanics in this game. I'll let folks know it's a D6 system, which I like personally. I've not really been a big fan of D20 systems most of my life, but I think it's too swingy for me. Yeah. I think that's kind of what it is.
I also don't like just rolling one die. I don't like that at all.
Yeah,
was actually one of the things we met with Mark first off. I was like, okay, I used Frostgrave as an example for like a miniature agnostic game. I was like, but I do not want a D20. I want 2d6. I want to roll, no matter what my test is, I want to roll more than one die.
So and it does a great job. I'll just to kind of give you a brief kind of synopsis of how the test system works is basically you roll 2d6, usually plus a modifier, and then if you roll an 8, it's a simple test or above. It's a normal test is 10 or 12 is a hard test. So if you know that, that's pretty much, you know, the basics of almost everything that you do. It just is really, 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 really great. I love this. In fact, I'll let you know that as soon as I played this the first time, there's another gentleman on the co-host on the show that Jason, who I said, Jason, you got to get in on the playtest of this game, because contact them, see if they'll let you playtest this, because I need someone to just talk about this game with as I play it, because you can play it solo, and that's the best part. Right now we're all locked up and we can't really do anything, so I'll just put the table out in the middle of my living room and I'll play out the scenario, and then afterwards I didn't have anybody to talk about it with. And so I'm like, Jason, you need to get in on this playtest, because I want to have someone that I can kind of bounce ideas off of, and you know, because I'm telling you folks, this, I've said it multiple times, I'm excited about this. I don't know if that's coming through properly, but I'm excited.
I can definitely relate. This is probably the game with the most excited I've been about a game we've done in a long time. And you actually brought up a good point I wanted to touch on when you said Mark's really good at these simple rule sets. One of the things that playtesters point out right away when they first saw the demo rules was their concern with the AI being too simple, because it's like, oh, it's too predictable. But you'll notice even in the demo rules that the apprentice necromancer, for example, he changed that up because he has this behavior chart that he does different things every turn. And also scenarios can script what your enemies do. So you have this really simple baseline of what the basic reactions melee and ranged enemies will do. But the game can do so much to change that.
Yeah, because it needs to leave room for the narrative and the exceptions, because if you have too many of those baseline rules in a game like this, too many things to remember, then any other exceptions you add are just more things to remember. So that basic foundation is really important to allow the
imagine being in like a scenario where there's this like statue that you're trying to protect, and the scenario says all melee monsters will target this statue. So that automatically, you know, changes their behavior. Just from that scenario, from one little simple rule change. So you keep distracting Mark with ideas for expansion. let's finish the first book.
We got to finish the first one, though.
That was kind of one of my questions that I had for you is going forward. I mean, is the plan to do, you know, granted, I'm going to assume that the Last Tales and the series 2 is going to be a success. If that's the case, are you planning on doing, you know, a series three with a supplement book, and just kind of keep putting out Kickstarters that way?
That's my hope. The nice thing about Kickstarter is it lets us judge that interest and demand before it even comes out. So, like, you know, at the end of this Kickstarter, if it is extremely successful and as much as we hope, then we can immediately start planning for the next steps of this game line. And, you know, we could easily do a new book for this game every year with a new set of miniatures. If it's the demands there, we can easily pump those out. And we have all kinds of ideas for how to, you know, expand the game.
Yeah, that
new races, new classes, new adventures, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we always try to fill that kind of that void that we kind of wanted as fans. And I remember vividly back in high school, we went to the game shop and we were looking for HeroQuest expansions when they were long out of print. We didn't know that. So we ended up looking at other alternatives and we found, you know, Warhammer and all these different cool miniatures games. But what I didn't see was, like, I wanted the kind of the D&D Warhammer like middle ground. I wanted to buy like boxes of adventures and go on little, you know, cooperative. I didn't know what cooperative gaming was back then, but I knew that's what I wanted. So that's what we kind of visualized for this. We want it to be sort of like that middle point between like a role-playing game and games like, you know, Warhammer, these big miniatures games where you just have ongoing stories. You buy a supplement, you know, you buy some more miniatures or some terrain and you just keep these stories going.
Is the line for series two going to be just as substantial as series one? Because series one, you put out a lot of minis. I think there's like, I want to say there's over 200 minis that you designed.
I think there's exactly 201.
Is it 201? So okay, wow.
Over 200 miniatures.
Wow. Is series two, do you plan on
series two, I basically planned out the number of miniatures and the different types of miniatures based off of series one. Bare minimum, we're planning on series two doing at least as well as series one. That's the hope. And that's kind of what we plan. The Kickstarter is going to be a little different just because we know more about how, you know, production costs and shipping costs and all that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it might be like, as you saw from, if anybody saw our Dire Alliance horror Kickstarter, they saw the miniatures price was like $5 more expensive because, you know, we're just judging that off of manufacturing costs and everything. We want to make sure we're being responsible as a business by making some profit. so we're the price will be reflect that, but that being said, it's going to have the amount of content planned is definitely on par with Fantasy Series 1, if not a little more. Awesome. And one thing that I wanted to do more of after I saw the giant and the dragon miniatures is I want more huge monsters. So
yes,
that's something that I want to put in series 2, and hopefully it does well enough to get more of those in there, because, you know, we had the dragon that was like the, kind of like the free miniature. I'm not sure when your video will go live, so I don't know if I can tease this just yet, but for series 2, we're definitely doing something similar where there's going to be a big huge monster for the first free stretch goal. When you're fund, this is going in the stretch goal box and it looks really cool. So
that's awesome. Now, if folks missed out on series 1, are they going to be able to pick up series 1 at all in this Kickstarter?
Yep, we're going to offer series 1 with all the unlocked stretch goals.
Wow. Okay.
Good price. It's definitely going to be more expensive than it was, because right now we're always offering backers of our original Kickstarters to the most value possible. So, like, if you want to get the best deal, you got to back the Kickstarter. That's kind of the benefit.
The incentive, yeah.
So once it's made, we can better figure out how much it actually costs as a product, and that's what's going to be priced respectively. But the Fantasy Series 1 will be available. You can come to the Kickstarter. You can back just the book for just Lasting Tales if that's all you want. You can get just Fantasy Series 2 if that's all you want. You can get both of those as a little discounted combo pledge, or you can get everything, Fantasy Series 1, Fantasy Series 2, and Lasting Tales all in one big bundle pledge. Those are the main pledge tiers.
Is there anything else that you're going to be funding with this Kickstarter? Like any accessories, any you know, kind of aids to that people might want while they're playing Lasting Tales?
There's the one thing I always want as a skirmish gamer. I don't always like flipping through books for stats and stuff like that. So one thing we definitely want to offer are reference cards, specifically for like monsters. So like we're going to have a pack of bestiary cards. They're basically going to have all the monsters that are in the core book
called adversaries.
They're going to have cards that have their pretty much just whatever's in the book on that card. So you don't need the cards, but they're definitely easier to have on the table to reference. You know, this scenario uses goblins, orcs, and a dragon. I get those cards out, I'm good to go.
Nice.
And they're also good reminders for stuff because there's in the game you have like the graveyard and the reserve when enemies are spawning. So it's you can have that card there just for easy reference and placeholders and stuff. So it's all optional, but it's stuff that like I, you know, as gamers we would want for games that we like because it's just the extra benefit of easy reference and everything.
Also, a deck of hero reference cards for things like spells for wizards, miracles for clerics, and then just all the skills for different classes. Yes, you can put those on your hero sheet. Every character has a little character sheet, but you can also just whip out the card if you get, I got magic missile. There it is. So
I'm really excited for you guys. I think that this is going to be a huge success for Blacklist Games and for you both and for Mark. And I know that you've already licensed out some terrain. Like if folks want to pick up terrain, I think it's, is it already available on their site or?
I believe they're going to make it available right when the Kickstarter launches.
Okay.
So when the Kickstarter is live, Black Site Studios, you'll see pictures on the Kickstarter page of our miniatures, you know, in action on the tabletop with some buildings and things on the table at the top. Those are MDF scenery pieces designed by Black Site Studios. They're doing Lasting Tales official terrain line, which they're going to sell on their website. So when we launch the Kickstarter, we're gonna have the demo rules up, and some people have already received their Fantasy Series 1 miniatures. So if they want to go to Black Site Studios and get some terrain, they can start playing the official Lasting Tales game right now, you know, right when the Kickstarter is live. But yeah, those are. I'm not sure when they're actually going to be shipping the terrain, but I believe they're going to have it up for sale when the Kickstarter's live.
If folks want to know more about Blacklist Games and about Lasting Tales, where should they go, gentlemen?
BlacklistGamesLLC.com is one of the best place to get all the news. Blacklist Games. We also, you know, on Facebook, Blacklist Games on Facebook and Twitter. We post a lot on social media. There's also Instagram as well. But I think the most information you can find is at the website, probably. Oh, also subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's Blacklist Games on YouTube. So.
Absolutely. And I'll tell folks that all those things like subscribing, liking, commenting, all that stuff helps grow presence on YouTube and social media. So if you're a fan of Blacklist Games, make sure you go out and do that because they're doing some great. You're doing some great work. And more people need to be aware of it. Gentlemen, I think that's probably going to do it for our session. I appreciate you giving your time. Time is our greatest asset, and I appreciate you guys giving some of your day for us here on VCG. And much success to you in your Kickstarter.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We hope to see everybody there at the end of the month.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this session. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. If you've watched all this far and you haven't already, hit that like button down below and make sure to check out the Kickstarter link in the description. All right, this has been Victory Condition Gaming because winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table. We'll see you next time. Bye now. Thanks so much for watching this video. If you would be so kind, and make sure you hit that like, comment, and subscribe, all the YouTube jazz that we're supposed to do here. It really is greatly appreciated. And if you'd like to support us more, you can check us out on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/victorycondition gaming. We have all sorts of Patreon perks, and it definitely helps support our show. Thank you so much.